This is Moss Whelan and Story in Mind. And just making a cup of tea. And I really ought to get out for a walk. But I've got a hot topic. And I'm not sure if I feel like I've covered talking about making it real. But also wrestling with the pitfalls of doing that. So I'm going to have to check through and see if I've done this already, covered this topic. But maybe we can break new ground. So basically the premise is that to believe, to sort of con oneself into believing, to trick oneself, and like especially say during drafting, editing, that we get to this point where the distinction between the fantasy of it and the reality of it is blurred enough that we're sort of moving back and forth between these two states. I like that. I was reading recently that the brain can't distinguish between the two states, as far as the brain is concerned. So there's, you know, so there's something going on that distinguishes and divides and separates the two. Now my mind is going to things like mass hallucination, you know, that enduring question, enduring and ongoing of, it's like, how can these people believe in this? And yet, that regardless of what side you're on of any debate, sides, that there's this belief. You know, say you believe in science. I believe in science. I think it's something that's, you know, it makes sense. and yet, you know, it has, obviously, like, say for me, it has shortcomings. And I would really like to fully embrace Bronze Age religions, modern interpretation. Translate it for me, please. But no. Okay, so pitfalls. One of the pitfalls that I've experienced is, especially say finishing a draft, like say the first draft or any draft, especially finishing say, you know, say the end product, you know, and it's done and it's out there and it's beyond your control. and there's this despair, like say for myself, like say I'm outside of it. I've read a couple times. I think the worst relaying of it was Virginia Woolf, when it sounded like, you know, she had mental health problems and she was okay while she was writing, but when she was out of it, then, you know, then there was this terrible problem that ultimately consumed her. And I've noticed that for myself. I've sort of saying, you know, the experience of being in the work and then coming outside, and then there's this, you know, there's this other world with all the problems and, you know, finances. We need this, we need that. And so it's like interruptions, and that makes it difficult as far as, say, to believe in the work, to believe in the novel. And complications. arise, a feeling of guilt. Oh, you know, I ought not be focusing on the writing. I ought to be focusing on other stuff going on outside. You know, people need things. People want things. And there is, of course, there's the balance that there's this social obligation. Is there? But say, how does one make it real? Like, say, how does one get into that zone where, you know, the scene comes to life and, you know, we're rooting for the characters, but at the same time, that there's this knowing of the dynamics and how it works, that, you know, character, it's a rise and a fall, rise and a fall. And so characters have to go through these trials and tribulations, but good stuff as well. And so, but even that say when that can move into the background, and instead that we're allowed to be there as writers, authors, creatives, there we go. And that's something where I'm at right now, jumping back and forth between four different points of view, and also a frustration of seeing my biases, gender biases, that say, I don't mean to, but that there's this other stuff going on that it just, I have this gut feeling that I'm saying, oh, well, you know, a character is this way, you know. And two, it's troubling because it doesn't matter what sort of category, that there's this habit of putting people in boxes. Oh, you're from that place. Oh, you do this kind of thing. This is what you believe in. And so it's a good thing to be seeing, but at the same time, it's troubling. Should I just let go and just allow this garbage, I'm looking at it and going, oh my gosh, I got this garbage in my brain. Like, for example, Tracy Cross, another writer, I think she's just down across the border, so in the States. And then she linked to this article about Stephen King and the magical Negro, especially in The Green Mile. And you know, this realization and just sort of going, oh, it's like, how often do I do this? Or say, I think the ultimate place to take it to is, okay, I'm doing this. So this cultural stuff, this cultural garbage and prejudices, I'm aware of it. You know, how can I take this and do something with it? So rather than just sort of this blind stumbling into writing, right? You know, you're just purging. It's just getting out onto the paper or the digital paper. But I even find that as a it's a filter. And those, being aware of those prejudices, that pulls me out of the reality of it. I'm just thinking back to first drafts. I don't think that I was I don't recall being so hung up while I was writing, but now I have that bit of distance and I'm seeing my own things going on. Moss, what are you talking about? The male lens versus the female lens. And what is that? That's where the view, or is it, sorry, male gaze, it's also a lens, but it's how you see things and positioning people. I think even when I was growing up, you know, there'd be this hulking guy, big guy, usually movies, Conan the Barbarian, right? So the guy is standing and he's, you know, raising something up, like say a sword. And down below is a female, and she's, say, grasping his legs. And that, for me, that's sort of summing up these roles, these gender roles, but also culture roles, right? You know, that these two people, right? She's supporting him, he's protecting her from whatever, you know, holding up the sword. I believe I saw an echo of that. There was a Star Wars poster, and it gets in the way. The solution would be just to push that, you know, just to say, oh, well, I'm not going to worry about it. But it's obviously, it's a concern that I have. So that, yeah, so that's something that, say, pulls me out. But at the same time, it's a good thing as far as, say, you know, what I stand for and what my intention is. Okay. So we sink into the writing and it permeates and that it becomes believable. I had a slightly strange conversation with someone who was, they were talking about writing. It's this kind of outside experience. And there's this weird sort of perception, and to I've been there, I've been in it, where it's not about the writing, it's about the status, like, you know, how much money you have. It doesn't matter how good you are, right? You know, you could be the best writer, you know, but if you're not making, you know, the big bucks, it's kind of like, well, why aren't you making the big money? For example, there are short story wizards, and on both ends of the spectrum, but that, you know, that amazing, but they're not making a huge amount of money. You know, their stuff may, you know, gets put together and it does get out there, but it just, in contrast to kind of pop stars of literature, for example. So slightly off track, but not terribly so. Realism, making it real. Giving the characters, I actually thought today the rule of three is good for editing, to just be thinking of, you know, say, how do you limit it, and but at the same time give yourself focus. And for me, it's the rule of three. Usually the rule of three, how I was taught it, was that that there was repetitions, like, say, a leitmotif, right? A repetition of something visually, or something that is heard, that you repeat it three times. But I think even for description, or at least for me, that's, as I go over it and over it, you know, it's so easy just to sort of, you know, dump a huge amount of description. But with the limitations of three details, three hits of description, then there's this, you have, it's like a Twitter when they didn't start giving you more, you know, you still have to confine what you're doing into a certain number of characters. And that's sort of the similar thing. And so you have to sit there and go, okay, well, what are the three most important things to describe? So rather than this large paragraph, you know, say we might end up with a sentence, maybe a couple sentences with these descriptions, and then later adding on more details to them. But it does two things. It lends this feeling of, on one hand, there's this sort of sparseness and directness, but it's also leaving space for the reader. And I can remember, I still have that experience with some writers, right, where I'm just like going, you know, I'm filling in the blanks. So yeah, so leaving space, right? And so this is, and two, I've heard people say this, leave space for the reader. It's like, what does that mean? And in my case, this is the example. Reality, making it real. And the difficulties of doing that. So for me, this is one way to work on this realism. But the other thing is that it's, in a sense, it's this fabrication, going in and editing or drafting, you know, say that you're in there. I was actually doing some rewriting, which technically is, like, I did, I think it's like the whole first chapter, because I had figured out a couple things. I figured out the theme, and, you know, it's, of course, it's staring me in the face. Then I figured out the main character's story, you know, and once that happened, it was like, oh, okay, so, you know, push aside all of the stuff that is dancing around the issue and just, okay, we're gonna do a fresh draft of chapter one. And it needs work, right? But it's got the story, the internal conflict, whereas before it was more just in emotional. I'm still of two minds about, you know, what internal conflict actually is. It's isn't it emotional? Isn't it one's own emotional state? I'm working on it, because I was arguing the other day that it is not emotions, and that today I'm going, you know, I don't know. It's a lot of emotions inside. Okay. So we're doing this work. We are leaving some gaps, you know, some places of footholds for handholds for the reader as they climb or descend whatever's going on. Just to end on that, that's adding some interactive, right? If you're limiting the descriptions, the details, limiting the information, then we have these moments that can equate to questions, right? It's this intrigue, but also engagement, right? Oh, you know, somebody's climbing this wall, you know, well, what kind, you know, obviously there's things to grab hold of. Okay. This makes sense so far. I'd mentioned Virginia Woolf. I'd mentioned her a long time ago, probably a couple times, but my personal, I guess, a kind of fear is where there's this erosion, and then the book becomes more important than the real world, and that there's this addictive quality to it, in the sense of people, for example, role-playing game. Well, you could, but more computer games, online games, and occasionally you'll hear a story about somebody who's, you know, played too long and got sick or something along those lines. They're not getting out for that walk, which, you know, I know is a good thing to do, but now I've got the added bonus of, you know, oh, I should isolate. I should self-isolate. It's like, what are you, what's going on? Why? oh, I should. I shouldn't get out and socialize. No, no, not right now. This is a bad time to socialize. Finally. Which is not true. I do like getting out and talking to people and stuff. And what is it? Is that true? No, well, no, sometimes it's not great. But anyways, the reality of versus the fantasy, say that one can believe so much, like I'll come across motivational stuff, motivational speaking, or there's a quote, somebody's got kind of a picture, nice picture with a quote. Maybe it's an athlete running, or it's a sunrise, sunset, and there's this quote saying something along the lines of, believe it and it will become real. Versus, so that's the, and I'm arguing that's the fantasy versus the reality of, you know, yeah, but you might not become that, you know, you might not win gold, right? And what happens if you are totally, you know, you believe, you're convinced, you know, you visualize to the nth. And two, that's something I'm still doing. I'm still visualizing myself sitting at the computer and enjoying it. That, you know, that I'm working on something that I like. You know, it has purpose. I'm into it. But the person who sort of loses, is unable to distinguish, and two, through just sheer force of will, you know, we're human beings are able to do all kinds of great things, you know, but we're also able to do, you know, not great things and not great things to ourselves. And what happens when you don't have that balance? Yeah, when the outer world versus the inner world and the unrealistic expectations. I can't remember, I was talking with someone and it was about lowering, and too, I think it was on Twitter, lowering expectations. And for myself, lowering expectations, and too, they were talking about it. But I was saying, I'm not going to write a bestseller, right? Because that's kind of destroying me, and or has destroyed me. Instead, you know, write something and enjoy it and share it. But that's tough. And is that exactly it? I'm just going for, say, what's the extreme? Because I've been writing and I've had this sort of like, oh yes, it's great, you know. And then of course you come back later and going, oh, where's the greatness? I'm not seeing the greatness. And say obviously skill and technique is coming into play and improving it. So the realism of it. One aspect that is interesting is that what we get from books and TV, movies, theater is a great example. We look up on that stage, right? And it's not realistic. Like, say, you know, movies are more realistic than, and yet not, because there's all this editing that's going on in movies and TV, books as well. It's, and yet we're able to trick ourselves for that moment and go, okay, you know, I'll go along for the ride. But especially, say, movies, they don't have that ring of reality, that ring of truth, that, and say the way that people act. I'm just remembering theater, old theater, and that you might see something and the reality wasn't wanted, and so you get something that's really overblown and dramatic, right? But that, you know, that's normal. I'm thinking of, say, operas or something like that, that there's this kind of overblown quality, or somebody performing a poem, especially say, you know, older performances, where there's this sort of puffed up theatrical kind of quality, right? So it's a very important thing we're doing now, and I'm going to read you this poem, and it's going to devastate you, so prepare yourselves for the crisis of your lives. And scene. No, and if it was reality, I almost feel like we would be offended. We would be offended that it's not so, you know, theatrical, right? That the wonder of it is missing. Like, say, I'll find myself watching something, a streaming series, say, and then I'll have moments where I'm sort of pulled out because I'm thinking about, you know, just how, you know, this is kind of strange. Why am I watching this? You know, I could be in the real world, but instead I'm, you know, focusing on this stuff and, you know, say perhaps, and it's not that good, right? It doesn't feel great. At times I'll go cold turkey on some of this stuff. And there's almost like this itch to scratch after a while of wanting to get away from the quote unquote real world to, you know, something that is, not, right? It's not real. Turning that around. So there's this surreal, there's this, not real quality to writing, beyond the creative, I'm just thinking of, say, you know, in a sense, the artist has absolute control. You know, we get to dictate. If there's a producer thinking of, like, say, make music, music production, but, you know, a producer also exists elsewhere, and then you have a type of producer in publishing via agent, via publishing house. And there's a concern that it be done a certain way. You know, they're thinking product, we're thinking product, but they're really thinking product. And of course, you know, they're going to jettison if that's not happening, or if that doesn't happen, you know, then it's game over. So it's not a kind of realism that is, it's more of a cultural realism. And I'm just thinking of watching movies from other countries. And the one I'm most familiar with is Korea. And I'll see things happening that are not, say, North American, by extension, say, European. I think enough time has passed that the identity is not so close. I'm just thinking of North America and Europe. But what about Mexico, Moss? Well, Spanish, eh? No? And two, pretty soon, yeah, we're gonna see big, not, you know, two, we're probably already seeing big changes, but sounds like big changes for the States. I hope for Canada. We'll see. But that's a weird thing, because it's painful. Change is painful. Okay. So this reality that's in the fiction, reality is cultural. There's all kinds of prejudices and biases, ways of seeing things. Even within subcultures, for example, just from the sidelines, you know, transgender, and I was listening to a podcast by another writer, who is who let's say they use the terminology that has changed, and they're saying, I think they said transsexual, and right away I was like going, ah, you're not supposed to, you're supposed to say transgender, and then I sort of was like in this kind of mix up of terminology. And two, what happens when it's very much, say, generational, and the stuff, for example, the stuff that I'm working on now, you know, is kind of Neanderthal compared to some stuff that's, say, you know, on the growing edge, right? It's not the cutting edge, it's the growing edge. And that these notions of reality are different, and say perhaps mine's quaint now, right? You know, oh, you're writing about, you know, punk rock and anarchy and blah, 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 you know. And am I, just as an example, like of a kind of a summing up of one's generation. Okay. And how are we doing? Oh, we hit the halfway mark. So everything's happy. it's the fake success before the fake downfall. Okay. So we're happy. We think we've achieved this, you know, everything's clear now. Why does it feel so convoluted though? Come on, cheer up. It's okay. The reality of the situation, just as a segue, a reality, like say the reality of all of a sudden, I'm just thinking, you know, what if you totally disconnected just across the board and we're out of the loop? You were in this a city or a town, but you just didn't know about anything going on the outside. And you just went about your business. And if anybody brought up, you know, things happening in the news, you just, you know, I've tried this to a degree. I've never been successful, but it's interesting, say, what occupies one's thoughts and how they define what's going on. And so say one person could be going around, you know, without the news, and possibly too connected to a completely different news. The character I'm imagining is, you know, that they are, it's constructed news, right? So they make up their own news about what's going on in the world, and in a sense they live in a different world. And if you talk to them, I'm just imagining that they start to slip and reveal what's going on in this other world, and you sort of having these conversations. I'm just imagining this now as first person, and the main character is encountering this other person, and so we're getting this outside perspective. And at first it seems, you know, oh, what's what? Where? And doing more you know, doing some research and finding out this place doesn't exist. They're talking about, oh yeah, there's this war in Chiramandu, and you know, it's there's this really big problem with the monkeys there. And then the main character goes and, you know, looks this up. What? You know, and it, you know, doesn't exist. What's going on? And then it turns out that this person has this whole, or like they've taken the earth and, you know, made it into something great and fantastic. For me, the fun thing about it is that, you know, that is world building, and there's the beauty of it. And then there's the also this questioning of perception and reality, like what is reality? And, you know, here's somebody who's, they're living a life, you know, they're not influenced by the outside world, but it would be interesting to see that character who has that fantasy world, that it becomes their real world. Part of that is attractive to me. I suspect other people as well. just even with fandom, cosplay, people who are, you know, burning up the hours. You know, we go to movies of Middle Earth, right? And there's, you know, ad campaigns, right? Go to New Zealand, and I look at that and I go, it's like, wow, we really want to get away from where we are, and the story, and two, its plot. Sorry, I'm going back to this person, this character who has invented, it's news too. It's not just landscape. Sorry, not just, but anyways, there's a map, and you know, there's lots of world building, ideas, culture, but the main focus of it would be news, right? And talking about the leaders of such and such, and there's a note of magic realism to this idea, because it's not a real place. We're talking about an invention, and And magic realism is that one thing is magical, and I'm not sure if it would fall into the category of magic realism. Say this invented world. That's plot. The story would be, why is this person doing that, right? Why is this person inventing that place? Why do they want to spend time on that and not spend time on, you know, real world events? What is going on? And, you know, to my mind, I'm imagining that, you know, the first person point of view begins to unravel it and finds out, you know, what's the cause of this, you know, why this person is turned away and they have invented their own, their own world news, fantasy world news. And I like it, but at the same time, I'm aware of the danger. And as far as ending that plot and the story, that it's kind of amazes and monsters. And people get, or let's see, some people don't like Mazes and Monsters. Mazes and Monsters was maybe made for TV, had Tom Hanks. So this is back maybe in the 80s. Yeah, 80s. And that's what's happening in this, is this person is unable to distinguish fantasy from reality. So mental health is involved. And so we have mental health, and just sort of ending up this plot and story, that it's a similar situation, that things go wrong, right? That the events in the fantasy world, like say that there's a war, there's, you know, corruption, there's racism, there's violence, that things get really wrong and bad, and the person who believes, right, that they actually have gone to the point where they believe it, right, it becomes their reality, and that they are so upset and so scared because of this news. There's a nice reflection there of our own situation, that, you know, we could get totally like wound up, and too, that behavior can lead to, you know, action, both good and bad, right? That we could be called to do good, healthy stuff, and then bad, violent stuff. And so that's the end of the that's the end of the plot and the story, and there's sort of a tragic quality. I wonder if there's a saving grace there, if there's something that, you know, a silver lining. If it was to end like with, you know, a happy ending, that it would be a sort of a resolution or sort of like say, you know, okay, I'm going to stop doing this, or maybe that there's a, you know, transformative purpose to the fantasy world news. That sort of that we can see our own, you know, our own situation, you know, in this person, this person's invention has led to this reflection of what news can do and does. Okay, so my own sort of feeling with it, with what we're doing with writing, with making plots and stories, is that there is this potential for amazes and monsters. Is that there is somebody out there who's going to, you know, lose the distinction that they don't all that they already are. Is it that there's this predilection that they're already either hardwired or it's softwired, that they are, you know, it's going to happen. It's a question of, well, in what way, you know, are they going to be able, like say, you know, is it, how is it going to explode, right? Is it going to be internal? Is it going to be external? Real people going to be hurt? Are they going to hurt themselves? And yeah, and so that's a minority of people. But I'm also conscious of my own situation and sort of seeing and going, you know, how close to making the fantasy reality am I? And at what point, and to, I pull back, and, you know, with difficulty. And now I'm imagining, say, the persona or the person who embraces it. I was in a conversation, it was with the therapist, and they were telling me about somebody who had it, in a way they had it much worse than I, and in a way they did not. And they lived in a fantasy world. I did not live in a fantasy world. And my response when I heard about this person was like, oh, that would be so great. And then that's where the conversation went, was, well, no, Moss, not really, right? This person is, you know, they don't have a real life, right? They have this imagined life. And, you know, and too, you can imagine, like, or I imagined, you know, how bad it must have been that they, you know, that they create that or they go there. How disappointed or, you know, the reward is not there. The allure of real life. And yeah. And their response was just, you know, forget it. I'm out of here. You know, I have a much better world. My fantasy world news is way better. Sayonara. Thank you. No, I'm out of here. And yeah. Yeah. The other side of it is that I don't think that ticket is there for me that say I visit, I don't stay. And that sounds funny, but it's, and also too, that there's a suffering there because, I would like to, but I'm not built that way. I'm not wired that way. At times I sort of like, oh, you know, if I could only achieve that, you know, whatever, you know, Zen, right? If I could only get Zen. And it's hilarious that it's called Zen because that, you know, technically it's wrong, but that's what happens with words. It's, you know, we need a word for this. Well, what's something close? How about all those people with shaved heads wearing black? Yes. That's it. We'll use that word. What are they doing? So the realism. I've heard people responding to fiction, and not my own response to fiction. For me, it's hopefully it's sort of like television show in the brain, and so there's that, and versus say hearing other people talking about it, and descriptions that say, it means so much, right? That there's something that's really important, right? Say emotionally. Hearing somebody talking about, so who's this? This was Drake, Alexander. It's something Alexander Drake, and he's big on theme and scene. And every scene must have theme. But hearing somebody's response to that and the improvement as far as the experience goes, that was just that there's this cohesive whole, right, that theme brings to it. I'm a subscriber, apparently. It's just, I believe, yes, theme, that's the way, that fixes everything. No, it's one more tool. And two, it could be totally be used wrong, if it's on the nose. That's another example of the fabrication, right, of making something, it's a machine, right? And that's a horrible, like say when you're on, I remember being on the outside and sort of, I was talking with somebody recently that I don't read anymore. Right, I rip it apart. I sort of see, oh, that's interesting. How did they do that? I'm looking at the blueprints, and I'm not looking at the book, and I am looking at the book, but from a different perspective. I'm appreciating it for the craft, the art, the work that went into it, and so for me, that's a shift. And I've been trying to explain that to people, and I feel like they're asking me to. I get confused because somebody will ask me to read. It's like, oh, you don't want me to. You don't want me to take it apart and then put it back together? No. Just read it. I don't think I know. I don't. Well, it's not that. I think it's that I don't choose to anymore. And a lot of appreciation, though. Okay, so how are we doing? Countdown. Oh, we got 10 minutes or so. So we're wrapping up, talking about the realism of it, but also the false, the fabricated nature, that it's not reality. But we're creating this space. We're creating an experience. But theme, as I was saying, is an example of where we are getting involved. Real life doesn't have theme. Oh yes, it does, Moss. No, it's like but that's us imposing on it. And I'm just remembering my stepfather's line about it's giving too much credit. Probably, right, conspiracies, it's there are conspiracies, but there are ones that are just, it's too complicated. It's, people aren't that smart. And I disagree, there's always a conspiracy somewhere, but there's just, there's conspiracies that are just way too smart. And I'm of two minds. But I like that. I like that notion that it's better fiction. You can do, X-Files, right? You can do television shows that are just one long, it's like, conspiracies within conspiracies, within conspiracies. And that fabricated, there's probably a better word for fabricated something that has been, it's something that has been created. It's something that has been worked on. It's been workshopped. Actors have tried out the dialogue and, you know, what's my motivation? Right. You know, time has been spent on it. Reality is not like that. And now I'm thinking, well, what about things like, you know, you have to give a speech or you're practicing for some kind of performance, but that's, but at the same time, that's not reality. I mean, it's not the same thing as sitting down and doing a book. And now I'm totally undermining my whole argument. But what if it is? You know, what if the reality experienced, the virtual world experienced in reading a book, engaging with a story, regardless, like if it's, you know, televised or if it's... Now I'm coming up with all kinds of counter arguments, right? You say, what if it's a live stream? Is, you know, but even when you get down to theater, right, or storytelling, that, you know, say some parent is telling their child a bedtime story, and I'm guessing that, say, you know, being younger, that we have that threshold of reality and fantasy is, you know, that it's not as clear, not as succinct, and that as we get older, you know, it gains definition. There's a definite boundary, right? You know, oh, that's real, that's not real. But now, as far as me, I'm in the bizarre land of, you know, apparently it's whatever you say it is. You know, politics, that seems to be what it is. You know, it's not both, right? It's not both. Well, you know, is it either? And yeah, that's something I'm curious about, is, say, is it, of course it's possible to see another's perspective, right, to gain insight. But at the same time, I remember talking with a racist, and this, and just say how I did that, how I pigeonholed that person. And I, you know, but part of me is going, you know, and rightly so. I mean, you know, come on. But, you know, there was this time before that I didn't know that they were a racist. And then in conversation, I was like, you know, realizing, I was like going, oh my gosh, this person's a racist. And so we're having this conversation and I'm saying stuff like, you know, oh, well, it's, you know, it's good to talk about it. It's good to hear, you know, it's good to hear other opinions and see other sides of it. And, they were pretty adamant though. And it seemed like I wasn't providing them with a target. I was more kind of like an open window, I guess. But I wasn't on the attack, whereas they were definitely on the defense, on the offense. And, but that is something, say, you know, what I'm working on now, do I invite that? Do I give a voice to, and a rationale to, you know, bigotry and hate? Do I sort of like, you know, well, this is their argument, you know, or do I just, you know, push them aside, you know, oh, we're not gonna, you know. And I don't think, as far as, say, the reality of the situation, I don't think that helps. You know, here I am doing fantasy, and yet within that fantasy, or SFF, that, you know, that the reality, the outer reality is important to me. And then I'm thinking of people who, you know, say that they quote unquote escape into fantasy or whatever. So interesting, good to talk about. Final words. My thought is that fantasy allows us, and I'm speaking in the large term of fiction, that it allows us a breadth that we might not normally. We could in conversation, like say, you know, put aside books and say somebody, we engage with somebody in storytelling. And much like how he's describing the fantasy world news. But coming back to our own work and, you know, the inevitable of, you know, oh my gosh, it's political, right? It's like, you know, oh no, it's not political. It's the right thing to do. He's like, no, that's political. The difficulty of that, and to be saddled with that, there's a counter argument. There's people who are on the other side, and to meet that reality, to engage with those folks, and of course. That, you know, say, talking about theme, that the counter argument is grotesque. It's grotesque, it's inhuman, and yet it's there. And so I guess I'm arguing myself into a corner that instead of looking away, and this, you know, that's me at my best moment, so is that I am confronting the opposite side of the theme and seeking its rationale. Like say, you know, well, like just thinking of my grandmother, actually, no, I gotta say it was grandfather and racist comments from my grandfather, you know, and to, you know, I cared about the guy, sure, loved the guy, but, you know, say the rationale for those comments and really trying to understand where that person is coming from rather than just, you know, sort of, oh, stereotyping and, you know. and, you know, what is it? The hope for common ground? You know, because, you know, my grandfather was not inhuman. Right? And here's just, you know, here's a flaw, but you know, say on a grand scale with many people like that, sort of, okay, I've got to finish up here. So the fantasy versus the reality. With the person, like say, occasionally I'll come across writers who it's really sounding like say, I don't know, is it therapeutic or has the component gone so far that it's turned into this, that it's not about fiction anymore, right? It's about this other life that they live, right? And there's a beauty to it, but also that level of concern, you know, to what end, right? You know, Is there a structure? Is something that is going to that this person is taking care of themselves to have that balance going? And it's a weird thing too to be saying, you know, oh, writing fiction, you know, that could be dangerous. You know, be careful. You know, you don't want to fall into the trap and. But I'll come across writers who I'm sort of going, you know, oh, wow, they're, you know, this is, they're talking about the, you know, main character as if it's a real person. And on one level, I'm so impressed and jealous. And then on the other hand, I'm, you know, concerned, right? Just a little bit. And, and two, interesting. And I'm glad that it's there, because say I've gotten so much out of it, in the therapeutic sense, you know, say gaining insight, and accessing subconscious, And yeah, so I think it's great. You know, I guess it's like a red flag. It's like when you hear about or see or hear about somebody who's playing computer games, 24/7, not 24/7, maybe, that they've haven't gotten any sleep, that, that's a red flag, right? And there's something, important going on. And in a way they're letting people know, right? It's like, oh, something's up. Something's not right. What's going on? Yeah. And too tough, of course, right? But I guess it's creativity, and that the balance is essential and necessary. Upsetting. I still, I want to be in my cave. I want to do my thing. All this stuff that's happening on the outside, it's like, yeah. Anyways, thanks for listening. This has been A Thinker, and take care. Take care.